look right. It's 2018. Hi there. Welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, as always. And folks, as we ride off into this new year, let's look at the future of electronics, the emerging technologies that will be taking the world by storm, and what's in store for our good old friend Silicon. My guest today is MEMS and Sensors visionary Alisa Fitzgerald, and we're talking about all of this and more. Hi, Alisa. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Amelia. It's a pleasure to join you today.
All right. We are here to talk about emerging technologies today. So you gave a talk at the MEMS and Sensors Executive Congress called Emerging MEMS and Sensors Technologies. So can you break those down for my audience? And what exactly do you mean by emerging technologies?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So first of all, the MEMS Executive Congress is an annual event where the business leaders in our industry get together to talk about the intersection of their technologies and our business industry and macroeconomic trends and how they're affecting all of us. And the MCIG group, which is a part of SEMI, invited me to give an emerging technology talk to provide some foresight on what's coming down the road. I mean, MEMS is a technology that is being developed worldwide at hundreds of universities, lots of laboratory groups in many countries around the world. And everyone in the audience wants to know, you know, what could be coming from all of these smart people who have been working hard on their various research projects? What could be coming along that could eventually become an interesting product or a technology that's going to solve a problem that we have today? So what my colleague Keith Jackson and I did was to try to get some foresight on what's brewing in the academic environment. We actually trolled through 500 academic papers that were presented at a recent international conference called Transducers 2017, and that was held in Taiwan in June 2017. We skimmed through all of these papers and tried to collect the ones that we thought would be most interesting and important to the business of MEMS and sensors technology. So we filtered these papers along slightly different criteria than an academic group would. We looked at, you know, is there commercial viability here? Is this technology solving a pressing market need or market problem? Would the technology be easily manufactured by the infrastructure that we see around the world today? So we applied those filters to the papers, and then using that filter, we identified several key trends and some very interesting categories of work that is being developed in research groups truly around the world. We call these emerging technologies because they still need a lot of engineering work to become actual products. I think one thing a lot of perhaps lay people don't, and even some engineers don't necessarily appreciate, is when you hear about an exciting new technology in a magazine, you're typically looking at the first instance or the first prototype that's been built, and there's actually a huge amount of engineering work that goes into ruggedizing that technology so it can be mass-produced. And so we call these emerging technologies because they're all going to need 5 or more years of focused engineering development to make them able to be made in volumes of 100 million units per year or billion units per year. And that focused engineering work is also going to take a lot of money. Most of these technologies will need $50 or $100 million of development, possibly by several companies, to be able to bring this technology to market.
Okay, so in order to have those emerging technologies in the first place, we need to talk about R&D. So you said at the MEMS and Sensors Executive Congress that you feel that silicon sensor technology is at risk of stagnation due to waning research efforts. So let's talk more about that.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting shift that I've been seeing over the last 10 years. So as a practitioner in this field, I attend a lot of academic and business conferences focused on MEMS. And there's one conference in particular, the Hilton Head Solid State Sensors and Actuators Workshop, which is held every other year in Hilton Head, South Carolina. It's a conference that takes the best of the best from North American universities, and it's an incredibly competitive conference to get into. And so you're really seeing the top research from the top universities. And this conference, in my mind, has been a bellwether for emerging MEMS devices and technologies. So, for example, the SiTime resonator chip, the MEMSIC accelerometer, some of the InventSense technology was presented at the Hilton Head workshop years before it appeared in the commercial market. So I've been attending this conference regularly, and when I last went in 2016, I realized at the end of the four-day conference, I really hadn't seen too many silicon-based papers or presentations. And so what I did was I actually counted up among the oral presentations for the last 10 years worth of conferences, I counted up the percentage of oral presentations that actually were based on silicon devices versus other materials like paper or plastic or non-silicon type substrates. And I was shocked to find that indeed the data proved my hunch, which is in 2016, only about 50% of the papers were actually based on silicon devices. The other 50% were focused on mostly paper and plastic-based sensor technology. Whereas in 2004, 12 years prior, 88% of the papers presented were using or based on silicon-type sensing MEMS technology. So to me, this is showing a dramatic shift in academic research from, 12, 13 years ago being all focused on silicon-based MEMS to now recently only half of the research is focused on silicon-based devices. So the trend is quite striking, and what this means is the academic world has moved on from silicon-based MEMS and sensor technologies. Part of that might be due to the funding environment. The end of Moore's Law is kind of giving people, and that includes funding agencies at the government, the notion that, well, silicon is kind of fully explored. Why should we fund this as scientific research? It's now something that the engineers have to worry about. But I think it's also that researchers are very interested in technologies that can be produced in low-cost environments using low-cost methods. Nobody really is excited about building billion-dollar fabs anymore. So I think the researchers are starting to get very creative about how you can use these lower-cost materials. And another key thing that's driving that interest in low-cost materials is we're all very excited about the Internet of Things, and people are talking about putting sensors everywhere on disposable coffee cups and trash cans and food packaging. And if you're going to put sensors on these kinds of disposable items that are made in the billions, the sensors have to be incredibly cheap. They have to be a penny or even less. And you just simply can't make a sensor that cheap on silicon, because silicon is an expensive material. And a raw little piece of silicon is already going to cost pennies. So if you're going to try to make a sensor cost pennies, it means the raw material has to cost much less than that. And that's why people are focused on paper and plastic.
Okay, Elisa, it's time to get out our MEMS and sensors enhanced crystal ball. Where do you see MEMS and sensors technology headed in the next couple decades?
Well, one thing that I think is clearly going to happen in the 2020s is we're going to see a lot more piezoelectric style MEMS sensors and actuators. Right now, most MEMS are capacitive electrostatic devices. They have a silicon comb drive architecture, and I think we're going to see that kind of architecture fade and be replaced by a thin film piezoelectric based devices. Already, researchers are showing they can make many different sensor types and actuator types using this exciting new material. So I think the 2020s are going to be about piezo-based MEMS, and we're going to see just a huge proliferation of sensors using piezoelectric thin film technology. The decade beyond that, I think paper and plastic right now, the kinds of research I'm seeing and the research devices I'm seeing, they're still fairly primitive, but there's some very interesting results. They need a lot more development. So I think we might start to see some of these very low-cost paper and plastic sensors emerging in the 2030s. And the question then is that still MEMS, or is that something we're going to call that something else, like roll-to-roll, or we'll probably come up with a new name for it. But I do think that we'll start to see some of these super cheap disposable plastic and paper sensors in the 2030s.
All right, Elisa, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know you just got yourself a big green egg, which, for my audience who may not know, it's a super cool outdoor cooking tool. So, what are you going to make with your big green egg?
Yeah, so I love to cook. It's a main hobby of mine, and I find very relaxing. And, of course, who doesn't love experiments that you can eat? But we recently got a big green egg and cooked our Thanksgiving turkey in it, and it was delicious. It's our new toy that we're starting to make all kinds of goodies, and so our neighborhood is starting to smell like barbecue, really.
I love it, and I bet your neighbors do, too.
Not the vegetarian ones, but yes.
Well, I think that's all I have time for. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's my pleasure, Amelia. Thank you for having me.
So we've tackled the future of MEMS and sensors technologies, but what does the future of robotics look like? Sweaty, apparently. So in this week's news you may have missed, I'd like to introduce you to Kengoro, the newest humanoid robot rolled out by the JSK lab at the University of Tokyo. So not only can this robot do a mad push-up, do a sit-up faster than, well, let's face it, most of us, this robot can also perspire as well. Yeah. Okay, so this is the most recent robot introduced to the world by the JSK lab at the University of Tokyo. Their first humanoid robot, named Kenta, was unveiled way back in 2001. Now, they say Kengoro, whose artificial perspiration system also conveniently prevents it from overheating, by running water through its skeletal frame and allowing steam to come out of its small vents. So, they say it's intended for crash test dummies or to improve muscle analytics for athletes and sports training. But I'm inclined to believe otherwise, and I bet you are too. Skynet. Skynet. Okay, so no, Kengoro can't do a backflip like that recent bot produced by Boston Dynamics. But working up a sweat is a huge step in the future of robotic domination. Or better sports analytics. Sure. If you want to check out a super cool, deeply nerdy white paper about Kengoro called Design Principles of a Human Mimetic Humanoid, Humanoid Platform to Study Human Intelligence and Internal Body System. So I've included a link to that white paper below the player. I've also posted a couple more links, including a YouTube video of Kengoro in action and more information about that backflipping robot from Boston Dynamics. Okay, so speaking of technologies of the future, let's talk about silicon carbide. Now, most of us are aware that silicon carbide MOSFETs can outperform conventional transistors in a number of intriguing ways. But few of us really know how to design with them. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled Unleash Sick MOSFETs, Extract the Best Performance, I sit down with Juning Zhang and Sujit Banjari of Monolith Semiconductor, and we get down into the nitty-gritty details of how you can design silicon carbide MOSFETs from Littelfuse into your next design. You can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by heading on over to the Chalk Talk section of eejournal.com by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, or head on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EE Journal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, you'll have to check out CES for me this year. Or even the best geeky hotspot in your city. Shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com. I promise I will respond. Or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of January 5th, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.